Imagine loving your life after 50 and feeling energized and excited about your future. Welcome to the Women in the Middle podcast, the podcast for women who are ready to figure out what they want and create the life they deserve. Here's your host and master certified life coach, Susie Rosenstein.
Hey there, this week we're talking about how a passionate career pivot led to helping women lose weight. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, Women in the Middle. I'm your host, Susie Rosenstein, your master certified coach, a midlife mentor, and I am so glad to be here with you again. So I'm sure it's not a huge surprise that several of my most popular episodes are related to weight loss or weight change, especially with menopause. It's one of those things that can be pretty mysterious and surprising, because even when you think you know what to do, it just might not work anymore. So, my guest today will shed some light on the whole matter as we dive into a conversation about shedding pounds in midlife. But just quick, before we get going, I want to invite you to a free masterclass where you will learn how to be a midlife mythbuster. It's called Discover Midlife Magic, Bust 4 Myths, and Boost Well-Being. And you will discover the impact of pervasive midlife myths on women's self-perception, life choices, and overall well-being. The real life consequences of believing in these myths and how they may be holding you back from your fullest potential, and the tools and insights needed to live life to the fullest during this exciting chapter. It's a 1-hour masterclass that will help you raise your awareness about some midlife myths that are totally getting in your way. I have a feeling they are. The next date is around the corner, so head over to www.susierosenstein.com/webinar to get all the details and register. Okay, now let's dive into this week's topic, which is all about how a passionate career pivot led to helping midlife women lose weight. My guest today is Heather Awad, MD. Heather is a family doctor in Minnesota who helps professional women over age 50 lose weight for the last time. She can be your guide to find your vision of your health and weight. She is the host of Vibrant MD podcast, where she discusses weight loss and women's health. Heather's a family doctor in Minnesota, and in her mid to late 40s, she noticed that personally, even though she was eating pretty healthy, the number on the scale started to climb into the unhealthy range. Like so many of us, she tried some diets and yo-yoed. Heather eventually researched insulin resistance and realized how important it is for women in perimenopause, menopause, and beyond. She was so inspired, it became her passion to bring healthy weight loss to other women with the same issue. I know you're going to get a lot out of hearing this interview, so please enjoy. Hi, Heather. Thanks so much for joining me today on the Women in the Middle podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I was so glad to have you come in, not just because you have something amazing to share about weight loss and yo-yo dieting and insulin resistance and all that stuff. Your career trajectory has been so interesting, and I love it when people figure out other ways to be fulfilled and happy professionally. So let's start out by talking about how we met, how you were attracted to making some change, and then we'll take it from there. So how did we meet? What was happening?
So I had been rounding in nursing homes during COVID. And once people got vaccinated, I thought, I need to look at my life a little bit, like a lot of people did, right?
Totally.
And so I went into a life coaching group for doctors. So I did that, and I really freed my mind up and thought, oh my goodness, I can keep commitments to myself. I started to feel like I could do anything, that I wasn't stuck in my doctor box. And I wasn't sure what to do at that point, but I started to like see the world. And one of my coaches in there was in your program already. And she said, you know, you got to check out Susie. You know, she's perfect for, you know, you're just at that point in life where you're feeling like, what should I do next? What can I do? And so she introduced me to your community, and that's how we met.
That's so fun. I love how the internet brings people together and then referrals bring people together. And you must have been sharing what you were going through to have had that conversation, you know, that other people started to know that you wanted to grow. Did you feel comfortable talking about that stuckness?
Yes, I did, especially with coaches, because they're, you know, that's what they're there for.
That's true.
where you just kind of sit there and you know, I was feeling like, well, I want to look at my life. I want to know what else there is. And not even knowing what that was. I mean, I'm not even sure I knew I was sitting in a doctor box. I started to look out and think, wow, I could do things. And I, you know, could look at my life a little differently, look at how I care for my family a little differently, look at what I think about my career differently. I wasn't sure what to do then, but it was a great place to, feel like I could do something, you know, the possibility was there. And then the next step was to try to figure out what that would be.
Oh, I love that you mentioned the doctor box. I've noticed that about doctors. I work with a lot of physicians. I come from a long line of physicians in my family. And I'm always noticing that physicians really don't appreciate all their skills and that there's so much more they could be doing. And it's nothing wrong with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
There's such transferable skills and there's such possibility, and it is a box. And I know a lot of careers are like that. Even when you get in corporate, you may not appreciate how many possibilities there are. I was stuck too for 5 years. And for me, I realized there were more things to do, but it, like you, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. I didn't know how to take the first step. And I was really just so overwhelmed with fear. And it felt to me at that time like confusion, but now I know more. I'm onto myself. It was fear.
Yes. Yes, for sure. I even, when I said I was going to start a business, I had friends call me. What are you doing? The doctors in their box. what are you thinking? Why are you doing this? You're a doctor.
Get back. You're a doctor. Box. Walk like a doctor, please.
Yes, work like a doctor. But yeah.
What you said about possibility, though, really is the thing. And we're just so uncomfortable dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, there's so many reasons. But why don't you tell me why you weren't dreaming? What do you think was going on with you that you weren't thinking about possibility? And then with some different inputs, you were thinking about what's possible.
I mean, a piece of it is having a very prescribed job and
yeah.
thinking, like, I'll do this. But part of it also is I have four children, and a spouse, and I'm a family doctor, so a natural caregiver. And so it was always kind of like, well, what does the family need? And then I want to also work. What does the family need? And I also want to work. Every year that was the issue. And there was, it had been a really long time since I ever said, what do I want to do? You know, what would be joyful for me? What would be a really cool thing I could do? It's just been decades since I thought of that.
And you mentioned in the notes, I was delighted to see this, that the transformation that you got from working in my community and working together was to bring joy and fun into your life. So it's almost like you needed permission or guidance or something. What was that experience like for you when that light bulb went off?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was, of course, loving working as a doctor and loving being a parent, but I think there's a workaholic streak in me in general. So I was always like, well, what more can we do with the kids? What other activity can they do? You know, what instrument do we want them to learn? And all those beautiful things, but it was very busy just for busyness sake. So then when I kind of dialed down a little and thought, you know, I don't need to work all the time and every evening, you know, at my life. And so then I thought, well, I'm not really sure what to do now. And it was like I needed permission to, you know, make a date with a friend. I had a friend who said, hey, do you want to learn Mahjong? And, you know, 10 years ago, I would have been like, are you crazy? You know, why would we do that? You know, that's not achieving anything, you know, or is it,
right.
Is it competitive? Can we win money? And it was just something fun to do. And I thought I think I did need permission to do fun things and have them on my calendar every week. And,
was that the first baby step?
Who said, you got to do something fun every day. And I was thought, wow, I'm only doing fun things like twice a week.
Oh my God. You want me to have too much fun? I don't know if I could do that.
Right.
What was the first baby step you took? Was it Mahjong?
You know, I don't think it was. I think it was just, actually making time to get together with a friend once a week, because I wasn't doing that.
Doesn't that seem crazy in hindsight?
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally appreciate it. I have done an episode and I rebroadcast it because I thought it was so powerful and I got good feedback on it. I felt too busy to cut a mango for my kid.
Wow.
When I was in the throes of that. And I had this little kid. He was too young to handle a knife to deal with a mango. We were watching the mangoes ripen on the counter. It's like, Mommy, can you cut me a mango? Can you please cut me a mango? And I actually said more than once, I'm too busy.
Yeah.
I'm too busy to cut my kid a freaking piece of fruit. I mean, that to me was my biggest mommy failure moment.
Yeah.
Oh, bad.
I can understand for sure.
So you started to loosen up some of these ideas about what was possible in terms of happiness and joy and also what you might like to do. So let's frame it a little bit with what your career trajectory was like in your 40s. What was going on then for you that was going well? And when you started to see, I think I need a professional change.
Sure. So I had been home again with kids for a couple of years, taking a parenting break because I had a child that had asthma that needed a lot of attention. And then I went to work in primary care and I went to a corporate center because I thought, well, this will be easy. They bring the patients and then I just see the patients. And then, but as the story I've heard from many doctors is that corporate medicine is really a prescription for burnout. So I got really burnt out there very quickly. I was getting very little sleep. Worked all day, came home, took care of my kids, worked at night. Oftentimes fell asleep at my laptop doing work and then climbed into bed. And I just knew, that just wasn't going to be a life I could live. So I just decided I quit and I tried a few things. I did some medical administration. I actually, trained in acupuncture and did that for a while. But I just wasn't finding fulfillment in these things. And so I got a career coach at that time. And I said, I need a job that isn't clinical. Help me find a non-clinical job. And so she said, well, tell me more about you. And we did a lot of talking and spent a couple of sessions. And she said, you know, I hate to tell you this, but you really like clinical work. You really like working with people. You hated sitting at a computer. You need to find a clinical job. And I said, I can't do it. It's a recipe for burnout. And she said, let's find you something that fits. Just keep looking, look at everything. Look at everything that sounds terrible and find something that fits. And then I ended up in wound care, which was a job I really, really liked. And that's how I ended up rounding in the nursing homes and rehab centers. But it was a non-traditional doctor job. There are family doctors in there, surgeons, all sorts of, I mean, even OBGYN doctors in this career. And the thing about it was there was no night or weekend. So I worked very hard during the day, but when I went home, I knew my work was done and I wasn't going to, you know, it would be really rare if I got a call.
Wow, that is great.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
Well, then COVID happened. And the big thing was that the nursing home, the elderly people were the people at risk. Even when primary care wasn't going to the nursing home, they needed the wound doctor to keep coming so that people wouldn't get sick and have to go to the hospital. So every place I went to was like, can you please keep coming? Will you please keep coming? And honestly, I'm built for hard things. So my thought was, I was made for this, you know? And so it was a little scary. It was, you know, it took a lot of, you know, things to do to make it work. But I, you know, I did it. The team did it. Everyone did it, you know, that worked with these elderly folks. And, but then once we got vaccinated, then I was like, oh, everyone kind of took a big sigh. And I thought, oh, I like this job. But again, this is my whole life. You know, maybe I should just examine, you know, I kept working there. I still like the job, but I also noticed that it wasn't my dream life. And I thought maybe it's time to level this up and look for what could be the dream.
And why wasn't it? Because now you had, you know, at least the work day was contained.
Yeah. I like the work. There's a piece of it for me. I would go to many, many places during the day. So I didn't belong anywhere.
Okay.
And that was the piece that I actually didn't like. You know, it's funny, even when it was time to get vaccinated, a lot of places I asked them if I could get vaccinated and they said, well, you're not really part of our staff, so no. And then I had one place who did think of me as theirs. And they said, you know, they invited me to come get vaccinated with them. And I thought, you know, but that was the job. You know, there were, you know, you come in quickly once, you know, you're there once a week and you leave. So you're kind of a peripheral part of it. And it's not that I need to be important, but there was a piece of it there that I thought, well, I just pop in and consult, but I don't know. Part of it didn't feed my soul that way.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that you picked up on that, you know, because so many of us get into this autopilot thinking and lack of awareness. We're just doing the thing because we feel too busy to even pause and examine what it is we're thinking about. So that's amazing. I think that is a huge thing you just said. But somewhere along the line, you started to think about being an entrepreneur. How did that happen? Because a lot of people wouldn't want to be an entrepreneur if you paid them, right?
Sure, sure.
So how did that start to happen for you?
Well, part of it was I come from, you know, my dad has had multiple small businesses. My brothers work together in a small business. And I always thought, well, that's cool. They can do that. But I could never do that. But you do look at your family and think, well, you know, what they do is really neat. And could I ever do that? And like I said, I was just taking care of everybody before. So I didn't consider that I could do something like that, because how would I take care of everyone else if I did that?
Right. Not even really understanding what it would look like, but it just felt like something that didn't mix.
Yeah.
So how'd you take the first step? What direction did you go?
Well, at the time, I, you know, had some issues with weight gain, with perimenopause and menopause, and found myself really unable to lose the weight. And then at some point, I figured out this issue with insulin resistance at this age. And I thought, oh, this is the magic. So I really kind of dialed into the science of that work. But then when I was doing the coaching, I realized that I needed to stop stress eating, because I didn't even know I didn't really realize I was doing that. And in keeping commitments to myself, I could also eat what I chose. And so with those things, all of a sudden the weight fell off really easily. And I had done a lot of lifestyle medicine as a family doctor over the years. You know, you have high cholesterol, let's talk about what you eat for lunch, you know, or maybe it was weight loss. So I was always interested in food as medicine. And I thought, oh, I could bring this to people, because a lot of people struggle with this at this age. And so that's why I decided, I mean, I never imagined I would be a weight loss coach, but all of a sudden it became perfectly clear that this would be a beautiful thing to bring to people.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I believe, if you're a listener of the podcast, you know that I believe you're always on the right path. So even though that path didn't look like weight loss coach at the end of the road, didn't look like that at all. Although you went wound coach or wound physician, and that at least started with a W. But you eventually got there. But again, what happened with you is so common with people, is that you had some success doing something that you struggled with, and then you wanted to share it. So I definitely want to dive into the specifics of how you lost that weight. But before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about your first step. Because again, being a weight loss coach is one thing. There are many ways to do it. But to do it as your own business is, again, a bit of a leap. So what were you thinking?
Right. Well, I had other role models, other physicians who were doing who had coaching programs. I had been in one. And then from there, you start to meet other people who are doing that kind of thing. And so I thought, well, actually, this is a real world that exists. And especially when everyone was on Zoom, it seemed like, well, doing this online, you know, seems like it would work great. So that helped, just seeing that other people have done this, I could do it too.
Yeah.
And then I just, honestly, I went back and forth whether or not to get life coaching certification, because I thought, I really know all the things from medicine, but I thought, you know, I can get deeper into helping other women with the issues of, you know, people pleasing and stress eating and that kind of stuff if I did that. And one of the wonderful mantras of people in the coaching world is to just get started, do it messy, just take some action and see where it leads you. And that was, you know, I don't think of myself as a perfectionist, but that also from a high achieving person was very freeing to just be like, okay, I'll start a podcast. It doesn't matter if it's good. It doesn't matter if I, you know, use my phone to record it and the sound isn't that great. You know, it will, someone will hear the message and want to, you know, it will help them. So.
And what did you think about getting certified? Did you end up getting certified?
I did.
Yeah. So what was that experience like for you? Because I had lots of physicians as somebody teaching and certifying, mm-hmm. and I saw lots of things that were very interesting to watch in terms of learning journeys, you know? What was it like for you to be a beginner in something that is very different than medicine?
It was a really fun experience, actually. I mean, I love learning, you know, deeper even on some of the, even self-coaching, the ways we think about things for ourselves. That was very helpful to me personally, but also just learning even what my own weaknesses are as a doctor. You know, I came up I had a master coach I was working with during the certification. She said, "Oh, you doctors, you just tell people what to do so much." And I thought, well, you're right. We do, because people come to us and ask us to tell them what to do. So to learn how to ask better questions instead of just telling people what to do was a big mindset shift for me and just a big practical shift for me.
Yeah, it's huge. It's really huge. And that was actually the light bulbs that I was watching going off is, you know, we want our doctors to tell us what to do.
Yeah.
We want them to be confident about telling us what to do. So it's such a big shift to believe as a client too, that you have the answers. So it's not just what you're doing as a coach, but as a client to really believe that you have the answers is massive too.
Yeah, for sure. I even sometimes have to tell people, I'm not going to tell you what to do about this because they're coming, leaning forward saying, tell me what to do about this. I said, you know, well, what do you think? And what could you create? And what would be joyful around whatever topic we're talking about? You know, and they say, well, actually, you know, putting my phone away at 9 o'clock and, you know, and I, well, there you are. Let's do that.
Exactly. I mean, to be told what to do about something specific and clinical, like, you know, insulin resistance or about, you know, a knee replacement, that's like a different thing. We're not talking about that. But yeah, it's so interesting to grow that way. And to really see how different professions can work together and how they can be enhanced. And it's very exciting stuff. Now, I love also that you mentioned that you started by doing it messy. This is a very hard thing for perfectionists, overachievers, and also just for people our age who are used to being the experienced one and not being a beginner. And I had a friend once tell me, it was so funny. I was years in. To my business. And I sent out an email and she wrote back and she said, you know, Susie, I'd be happy to edit this for you in the future. And I thought, oh, my typo drove her crazy. And what's so funny is I said, thank you very much, but it's okay. I've learned that in situations like this, it's more important to send something out that's helpful than to worry about one typo. But of course, I'll fix the typo if it's like a blog. But it was just so sweet and very generous of her to offer. But I was so proud of how far I'd become because I worked in publishing for so long. And in the old days, if you had a typo, it might be on a book and you just printed thousands of copies and you had to live with it.
Wow.
Yeah. Right? It's so different.
Yeah. It's a big change.
So different. So what was messy? Give me another example of what you thought was messy. The mic example is great.
Yeah. So the first time I launched my course, I thought I'm going to just tell my people that I know that I'm doing this. Come lose weight with me. It was a discounted price. You know, it's, you know, I told them it might be a little messy. We'll have tech issues. It'll be, but we're going for it. So I had, but I still had to put that out into the world with emails and social media and everything. And I had hired a company, that was hourly to help me with all these things. So we set a date for the launch. And it came and they did not send all the things. And I met with them and I was like, okay, the launch was this week. We're supposed to start at this date. And they were like, it's not really ready. You've got this and this and this and this. It's not really ready. And I was said, okay, we're putting it back 1 week, but it's launching next week. you must send all the emails. What can we fix now that you want fixed now? But it's going, it's happening. And they were, and I didn't even know how to use my own platform. I was using Kajabi, which is a common course creator platform. I didn't really even know how to use it. That's why I needed this company, you know, to put the things out. So we did launch the next week and it was messy, but 8 people came and lost weight with me that first round. And it was, in the end, it was beautiful, even though the people I hired didn't believe it was okay.
Oh, it's so funny about tech, because that was a combination of a tech problem and probably a communication problem or a supervisory problem on your behalf, you know, and yeah, we don't know what we don't know. And we don't know the people we're working with, how competent they are with scheduling and with communicating and asking questions and expressing ourselves about our expectations. It's such a learning curve. Yes. Nothing like a good tech problem. As you're talking, I'm thinking about a few of them. And sometimes it's just social media gaffes too that happen. Like I remember one time I was on live and I posted what I thought was a good little live clip talking about something helpful in midlife. And my sister saw it on Facebook and I was in the backyard and she says to me, "Susie, your dog is pooping in the background of that video." Like, what? I didn't notice him. And he's huge, so you could see him very well. It's just the funniest thing. Oh, there's many. I mean, that might be a fun book, actually, someday. Okay, now, I said that we wanted to get back definitely to you talking a little bit about buffering and insulin resistance and how to actually lose weight in midlife. And I have noticed a big change. I'm going to be 60 this year. And I would say in the last 1 to 2 years, things have changed again. Like when I first went through menopause in my early 50s, mm-hmm. I noticed a bit of a change. But now there seems to be another change. And I'm having some different issues. It's harder than ever to lose weight. The weight seems to have redistributed itself again. So mm-hmm. Heather, tell us the things. Please help us.
The redistribution is a difficult problem, because some of that we're stuck with, you know. Even we have our bodies and they are some of our shapes are what they are. But as far as the weight loss, I think the hard part is that when you're 25, and we all remember being 25, that there's like 25 choices on how to lose weight. But when you get to menopause and 60s and 70s, looking at this insulin resistance is really the key. I think it's the magic for weight loss at this age and weight maintenance. And really what we need to have happen is kind of a throwback to the late 60s when the grandmas said, don't snack, just eat your meal. Someone plated your food for you and you ate it and then you went on. Whereas now, you know, and also you watch TV and you didn't eat at the time. Whereas now we eat all the time, all day long. There's food, you know, in the break room. There's food at every event you go to. People come to me and say, it's normal to eat while you watch TV at night. Well, it may be normal, but it may not serve you for your weight loss journey or for your health. But really what we need is to have some time where nothing is going on with our digestive system. And this is how our body will burn some fat, which is supposed to do normally. So we eat, you know, we use some of that glucose that we have eaten for fuel. We store some of it, a little bit in our liver. We store a little bit as fat. And then we need everything to go quiet for a while so that the body, as it fuels itself, pulls that little bit of fuel out of the liver and then says, okay, we're just going to burn some fat now until it's time to eat again. That's really important at this age.
Your voice is so nice and you're moving your hands around like you're showing me what the liver's doing and how our bodies are talking to themselves and the body parts. It's so cute. You're making it sound so doable. So what does that look like?
You know, part of it really is going to something very simple, like having 3 meals and cutting out snacks. Now, I will never tell anyone to not eat when they're hungry, because sometimes in the middle of the afternoon, I find I have underfed myself at lunch, and so I need to eat something. So I'm never telling people don't eat if you're hungry, but always thinking, that you have your meals. And if you need to nourish yourself at another time for your body, because it's hungry, then do that. But everything else is habit and emotions and entertainment. And we want to move toward not eating at those times. I will add that one of the difficult things is that we have so much refined sugar in our lives that this works against our eating regular meals and going on. Again, when the grandmas in the 1960s were making their meals, they had some refined sugar. They put it in their desserts, and they had dessert sometimes during the week. But now we have refined sugar in 3/4 of our packaged foods.
Wow.
So things like taco seasoning may have it in it. Some brands do not. It's that added sugar line. And then even things like my chickpeas, that can of chickpeas I buy never had it in it, but one of my clients had that in hers. She found added sugar in hers in the brand she was buying. So she switched to a different brand.
That's fascinating. I would have never looked in at a can of chickpeas looking for sugar. Wow.
And I used to think I can't eat 3 meals because I get hangry in between meals. And it turns out hangry is withdrawing from refined sugar. So we want to have sugar when we want it. And I personally want it when I'm having a piece of cake or some ice cream in the summer or a homemade cookie. But I don't want it in my tacos. You know, I don't want it on my salad. I don't want it in my beans.
I don't want it in my beans.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I can eat more regularly and have my 3 meals if I'm not having sugar at all those meals.
Wow. And what happens when you're making that adjustment to eating just 2 or 3 meals a day? And you do find that you underfed your body and need a little more fuel. Is there some guideline for what that extra little bit of fuel should be while you're pushing forward and trying to get to just clean eating on meals?
Sure. I would say take whatever your usual snack is and try to make it healthier. So, you know, having something like cut vegetables, you know, it's nice at the grocery store, they pre-cut them for us now if we want, with some hummus or something with a little bit of nut butter is good. A little bit of protein, a little bit of healthy fat, some fiber that is, you know, vegetables are of course the best, but fruit can work as well. Can be a step back from whatever your usual snack was. You know, some people, I caution people against nuts as a snack because it's really easy to overeat nuts.
It sure is.
Nutrient dense. I'm not going to say the C word, but they're super nutrient dense. They're really easy to overeat. So I don't like them for nourishing in between meals unless you're stuck.
I guess one time I tried to be very specific, like I planned in advance how many nuts, which I thought that was a ridiculous thing, but I could see if I picked 7 or 8 cashews, that is different than what I would have done if I wouldn't have separated them out in advance. I would have put my hand in there, grabbed a handful, and that probably would have been probably 2 to 3 times
the amount,
just with a cashew example, because they're delicious. But, you know, yeah, so I totally see what you mean. And, you know, I have to say, I don't know if it's the tone of your voice or the information you're delivering, but it doesn't seem like rocket science. You know, this seems very reasonable. I love that you made the reference to when we grew up and what the grandmas were doing. As you said that, I had a specific memory of my grandmother in the kitchen making chicken pot pie, making meatloaf, like making the classic dishes. They were absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
And there did seem, you know, like there was a lot of home cooking going on. Mm-hmm. And fewer packaged foods. And then I remember as a kid, though, the packaged foods exploding. So yeah. I grew up in the 70s. I grew up on Twinkies and Hostess cupcakes and all that stuff really exploded. And now it's in everything, including so-called healthy choices. So yeah, there really is a difference. It used to be separated to more to sweets. And now it's very different. Yeah, you're right.
I even have a client who went to a national chain that's known for being health foods. And she said, that is not a health food place. It all says organic, but there's so many things that have added sugar that surprised her. She had made a special trip there because she thought, well, this will help me find some new brands. And she found a lot of sugar. So it's everywhere.
Yeah, it is.
So you have to read the package.
Now, another thing you mentioned is stress eating. So can you talk a little bit about that? You said dialing that down also really helped you with your weight loss.
Yes. So a lot of times we just have a big feeling and so we eat. And I say it like that because a lot of people, we don't examine it. And the way to stop stress eating is to stop and look. And if you know that you've got that big feeling and you want to eat, just stopping yourself and saying, okay, is there an emotion here that I can name? Can I name it? It doesn't have to be fancy, mad, sad, glad, or just, it's just stress is fine. Any of those is fine, but give it a name and then notice where you feel it in your body, because this actually does help too. It calms you down. It brings you into your body so that your mind that's kind of spinning and worrying about this big emotion can notice it. You know, am I feeling a tightening in my throat? Is there an ache in my gut? You know, do I have tension in my shoulders? We all have places where we keep these emotions. And so noticing that is a great help. So the nice thing there too is that sometimes while you're doing this, it doesn't take all that long, but you may notice that it's starting to fade away. A lot of times these emotions will come in like a butterfly and fly away again out. And that's a beautiful thing, because then you think, okay, I watched that stress feeling come in. I watched it go out and I'm okay right now. I don't need to eat that because I'm not hungry. But other times the cool thing is that you find something out about yourself and your life. Like I would find myself standing in the pantry, reaching for cereal. I would put my hand in the cereal box. And when I decided to notice this, I was like, okay, I'm standing here. What's my emotion? I'm mad at my teenager. And then I got really curious at that point, because that kept happening. You know, the first time I was like, okay, I'm mad at my teenager. Fine. And I can go on. But when it happened two or three times, I thought, I need to look at this, because why, you know, what's going on? And yeah. I thought, well, part of it is my teenager is at a stage where she's going to make me mad because she needs to separate from me. She needs to be independent, and that's going to make me mad. But I also noticed that I was kind of mad at myself at the way I showed up during that encounter. And that was happening each of those times as well, which made me think, you know, I can do some things to accept this. Accept that she needs to be independent, not always like it, but I want to think about how I show up so that I'm being the mom I want to be, and I'm not being a jerk back when she's being a jerk to me.
Exactly. Somebody has to be an adult.
Yes. Yes. But I wouldn't have even noticed it. I wasn't noticing it when I was just eating it. I just went in, ate some cereal, felt better, moved on.
It's so interesting. One of the things that I noticed dialing it in, it kind of surprised me, because I wouldn't think of it as stress or stress eating, but it's when I'm writing a blog or a podcast, like when I'm preparing, pulling together notes, when I'm sitting down and doing that task according to when I've said I'm going to do it. So it's in the calendar, I'm doing it. And a lot of times that is when I would just stop what I was doing and walk to the kitchen. And then I would be rummaging around in the fridge. The fridge door would be open. I'd be rummaging, probably looking for cheese. And then I would see myself doing that. I'm like, why am I here? I wouldn't call that stress, but I guess there really is stress associated with a deadline, with not knowing exactly what to do next, with feeling a little overwhelmed or confused or pressure to be creative or pressure to have this be really good. Something like that. But naturally, I wouldn't have called it stress. And so that's been a big eye opener for me, to watch that behavior, to watch myself not state a task, that it's broken by something. And then, you know, if you stop what you're doing and have to try to refocus, it takes forever to refocus again. Like, you know, the other thing I noticed about mindless eating for me had to do with socializing with my kids, and it had to do with nachos. So one of the things, especially when they were at university and they would come home, it would be cause for celebration and we would go out and get nachos. And I pride myself on making a great tray of nachos. And when we would go to a restaurant, we would be very picky about nachos and be very critical, and then finally find a place that put enough cheese on those chips. But what I realized was how much social, what's the right word? Just like how much I was getting out of that socially. And I was tying it into eating the nachos to be included and to be having fun and all of that. Yeah. You know, and I realized just because they were eating nachos, I could eat one or two. I could eat some. I didn't have to eat as much as they're eating, and I didn't have to eat any at all. And I could still be having fun. That shocked me, you know, that I had options and right. how much I was associating nachos with celebrating with my kids and having fun.
Right. Like it was about, like the center of it was the nachos, not being with the kids.
Yeah. And we did kind of elevate it with our judgments about good nachos, but, but yeah, like just pausing and being aware of what you're doing, why you're doing it. And, you know, that you have options. You can stop when you're watching yourself think and feel and do. You can like say, you know, I could stop right now and it's okay. Or I can keep going and be more curious about what it is I'm actually doing. Just yes. more connected. I love the example you gave that you're in the pantry. I'm in the fridge. Yes. We're looking around for stuff. So would you say, is this the bulk of your business is helping women lose weight over 50?
Yes. Yes. That's all I do now.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So how can people get a hold of you?
Sure. If people come to heatherawadmd.com, that's a great way to connect with me. And I also have a podcast, the Vibrant MD podcast. But if you look up my name, it'll be there. I'm on the socials if you look up my name as well.
Awesome. Do you have to be a physician to connect with you?
No, I work with all professional women.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So what is your biggest piece of advice for people who want to make a change mid-career, and for people who want to lose some weight over 50? Two big pieces of advice, please, and thank you.
I would say dream big and, you know, and look at what's possible and think that probably what's possible is even bigger than you're thinking. So dream even bigger.
Love that. So good. And now what about helping us gals lose some weight?
I would say try to have more time where your digestive system is quiet. You can have water, you can have plain tea, you can have plain coffee. Those do not wake up your digestive system, but try to have time where you're just hydrating yourself, but not eating anything. So that includes walking in the kitchen and putting that one cherry tomato. That's
Oh, it includes that? Just that little innocent cherry tomato? Still an insulin hit. Yeah.
The BLTs, the bites, licks, and tastes, try to put them away for a while.
You just said it. It's like let your digestive system take a little vacation.
Yeah.
That's it.
Time to rest during the day.
Oh, that's so good. Heather, thank you so much for joining us. You've given us a lot to think about. I love what you've been able to do, how you've challenged yourself, and you're going in a direction that you didn't even see coming, but it made perfect sense. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been terrific.
The topic of midlife weight loss, something that so many of us talk about and focus on quite a bit. I loved hearing about Heather's personal journey to figure out her passion. Like so many of my guests and clients, she was on the right path, but the end result wasn't clear, and now she loves what she's doing. As far as midlife weight loss goes, Heather really put the spotlight on insulin resistance and how important it is to understand how it works and can affect weight loss. As she said, it's important to create time for your digestive system to rest. What a lovely way to think about it. So good. All right, that's it for this episode. As you know, this podcast is all about how to love your life again after 50. It's really all about coaching you to be more intentional and to incorporate mindfulness into your life as a regular practice. This is how you put yourself on your agenda. My focus as your midlife coach is to help you get unstuck, clear, and focused on your current values and priorities so you don't have regrets. That's why I want to invite you to have a breakthrough yourself. If you're feeling stuck, give yourself the jumpstart you need in the form of a breakthrough coaching call. It's a 2-hour private coaching call that's basically a deep dive into what's getting in your way. What is getting in the way of your clarity? We can coach on anything you need to make a breakthrough, because
I have the feeling you're tired of wasting valuable time. So head over to www.nextchapterbreakthrough.com. I have a few spots open, and one of them can be yours. And finally, for show notes and links, head over to www.susierosenstein.com and click the podcast tab and look for episode 350. You'll also see links there for my new show, Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs. Thanks so much for listening. It is time for you to put yourself first, one thought at a time. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you next week.